My oh my oh my, he's back. Welcome back to the Virgin Mind, another episode of the late night podcast. Done while I am slightly inebriated. Not really, I just had two beverages. They haven't even had time to kick in yet. But I am avoiding going out, considering we're in the middle of a pandemic and we are surrounded by people who don't know anything about science. And that's not a political statement, that's a statement of fact. Because I think one thing that is shared in every single country in the world is that education is caught lacking quite often. And it's on purpose. And it's influenced by special interests. It's influenced by wealthy people. It's influenced by the citizenry themselves, all falling for any variety of honey traps and nonsense. And this isn't by no, this, I'm feeling in the mood today. So this might be one of my actual best podcasts. At least I hope so. And it is something I'm going to jot down into this reworking of the book that I'm writing. But allow me to explain to you something that I think is profound. First, we're going to come at this from the religion angle. And the reason I'm going to do this is because a substantial percentage of the world population considers themselves religious. And one of the biggest ones that we must need to contend with is Christianity, right? And this is not necessarily a for or against religion. If anything, this will come across as a little bit for, but different from what you're used to. In this moment, I'm going to talk to people who believe that they are Christians. I find it very intriguing that they think that the devil is stupid. That the devil is just, you know, behind every log, jumps out and is like, I gotcha. That he's like a vampire, you know, just wave the Bible at him, you know. And actually, Hollywood did a very effective thing with this, and so does, I guess, the Catholic Church. But, you know, hold the cross, wave your Bible at the devil and he will run away from you. And the very interesting thing about that is that it's symbolism, and humans are very, very susceptible to symbolism. We've changed a little bit because if you go all the way back to whichever anthropologist you want to use or whatever history you want to use, creationism or non-creationism, it doesn't matter. Before people had the knowledge that we did in the last 400 or 500 years, when they looked at the sun and the rain and the whatever, everything was a calamity or a benefit. It was pretty much, that was just the way it is. If there was a typhoon, they were like, God has dumped this upon us for our sins or whatever. And he may have. He may have. It's just, understand the thought process of people that didn't know really. They didn't have satellites to look at the top of it. And they didn't have things to measure the wind pressure and other things like that. So it's just not the same thing. And now, the reason why this is important is because in my understanding of the devil, and definitely when you look at some of the things that have transpired in institutions that claim to be Christian, you should understand this concept by now, that the devil can quote more verses than the average Christian can. And he would take that Bible or that cross that you wave at him and beat you over the head with it. He's not some vampire that you can spray silver or garlic on and he runs away. That's the problem with symbolism. Humans are susceptible to this, and they just, like, you know, throw the Bible at it and it'll explode like a nuclear bomb because the devil is evil and the Bible's holy and we're good. Negative, Ghost Rider. That's not how that works. It's, was it not the devil who tried to use verses on Jesus? Like, come on! To have the gall. Do you understand the cojones that are necessary? No. And so that, let me circle back to the beginning of this conversation in which, yes, education is caught lacking. People are caught lacking. People are caught lacking in their perception of the devil. But I think the reason why I know I can write this book and why I should, and the reason why a lot of the problems in Christianity and all these other things occur, we are surrounded by idiots. Yeah, I mean, you've got these people who claim to be Christian and don't believe in continuing education. They don't believe in further educating themselves. And worse yet, they are some of the most active missionaries. Now, on the one hand, I guess the word of God, so to speak, would not reach some of these people. I believe it would, actually, because, and I believe, as most religions do, they, one way or another, some version of it reaches almost everyone on the planet. It's just a natural occurrence for the most part. But you can see this especially poignantly with Christianity. The problem is, or the question is, where does it meet you at? Because if it meets you as a person who can't read for yourself, then you're entirely dependent on the person explaining it to you, and you can only pray that they are the best example. But if you're listening closely to that individual, you will be able to realize contradictions when they arise. And that, I take that back. I hope that you would be able to realize contradictions when they arise. But that's actually part of the issue. Most human beings either A, do not, or B, which is probably more likely, they do, but they go with what they feel. And what they feel is biased by the idea that they want to be sweet-talked. And I was thinking about this earlier today, and I am about to, for those of you who randomly listen to my podcast, wherever you are in the world, I think I had some people in Australia listening a while ago, I want you to think of this concept, right? Think of Adam and Eve in this garden, and the devil decides to go to Eve. Right. Now, I understand why some women have a very negative connotation of that and the burden that it has carried on for thousands of years, etc., etc., etc. But there is something that's very interesting just from a philosophical perspective. Let us say that you take that story to be somewhat accurate, and you have Adam and Eve, and Eve is essentially standing there, and the devil gets into her mind and gets her to eat this fruit. But he doesn't really do that. I mean, technically, if you look at it, right, all of them were punished because they each carried an individual responsibility. The devil asked her whether she should eat the fruit, and she knew she shouldn't eat the fruit. All he did was mess with her idea of the consequence. And the irony of that that I am bringing to you now is today, if you look at popular culture and if you look at dating, right? If the guy is going to approach the girl, what does he have to do? He has to quote-unquote spit game, does he not? I hope that you can fathom the depth of what I just said. And yeah, you may think me pompous. I really don't give a damn. I'm literally, think about that. In today's world, when you look at pop culture and you scan Instagram for half a second, women discuss whether some man has game or not. And then men discuss their game as a process of lying, right? In how they say this, that, and the third to woo the female. And I just thought, you know, in an allegorical sense, this is a tragedy. Oh. Humans, I've probably said this before. If I haven't, this may shock you, but don't let it shock you. It's just an expression of my frustration. I wake up on this planet and I feel like I am an alien, like I am being punished in some way for even existing in this space, because I look to my left and I see hell. I look to my right and I see hell. And I'm like, what is this place? What is this dystopian existence that we have in which people are lying to themselves and to everyone around them on a constant basis? And like, what is this? And the truth is, simply, I'm a child of two worlds. I mean, my parents are Nigerian. I'm born here in America. I speak multiple languages. I am a student of knowledge, a forever student of knowledge. And so, and on top of that, you know, I'm in a very concentrated racist environment, not in every environment, and not in the context that you hear about it for all of you international individuals. I actually grew up in a private school where we were the only black family there for like 8 or 9 of the 10 years that I went there. And so people calling me nigger does not faze me generally in the slightest. I mean, of course, you could probably catch me in a mood or something, but and then on top of that, I know what I want to do with my life. So just to phase me with it is just difficult. But usually I've developed the skill to cut you down equally with words in a way that makes you realize what you're doing is stupid and makes it complicated. But I actually lived in that racism. This wasn't some abstract thing. And I'm not saying that my experience is different, better, worse, or whatever than any other African American. I just want you to understand my specific angle on it. Because that happened as all my formative years. And then I finally made it to college. In fact, I rush graduated out of that private school so I could get out of there a year early and get to college. And I got to college and my peers were like, you talk white. And from then on it began. So like, I caught it from both sides. So I didn't really get to participate. I got to observe. And that observation has continued to this point in my life. I mean, 31 and a virgin, almost 32 and a virgin is, I think statistically speaking, I'm in like 0.002% of the population or something like that. Should tell you a lot. But here's the deal. The reason I went on that little explanation and the reason why I brought all of this up is I think I've come to the conclusion that the reason why Christianity is messed up is because at some point, pastors follow tradition more than they follow God. And I think that even when you consider other religious practices, you will find the same parallel. And I make the allegory with economic systems. You know, here in America, we bash the mess out of communism and socialism and monarchies and whatnot. Ironically, though, when you just absorb statistics as they are, if you don't add any hyperbole, the gap between the wealthy and the unwealthy is growing dramatically. And so you have to ask yourself, are we seeing the formation of a technocracy, plutocracy, whatever version of crossy you want to put in there? The point being that there's a small group of wealthy elites and a bunch of poor people. And if you see that and then turn and look at communism, which became, we're going to help the poor, everything's going to be shared in common. And there's a bunch of rich people that had, or people who became rich because they took everything from the populace and centered it on themselves. Socialism did the same thing. China is a wonderful example of this right now. I mean, yeah, they have a lot of people becoming billionaires and millionaires, but you're only allowed to do that depending on how close you come to party ideals. So, what's the difference? I mean, they have 1.4 billion people, so even if 400 million of them become super wealthy, that's not the masses, because it's about percentages. And I mean, do we even need to go into Russia? You know, and I'm not even trying to bash China and Russia. I'm looking at humanity in its rawest form, that it is flawed, and we are deeply flawed. And why is it that people don't want to acknowledge that? That should be a daily acknowledgement. You should wake up and look in the mirror and be like, you know what? We are human and we are flawed. And I'm going to try to fix flaws today. Not, hey, we are flawed, so I'm going to go to the strip club and try to bang every stripper I can get. Or, hey, we are flawed, so I might as well take all this gold and hoard it for myself. Or, hey, we're flawed, so we might as well run the country anyway because we have the most resources. Or, hey, this kind of humanity is flawed, so I'm just going to murder people to get my high. Which, in that last point, I'm referencing serial killers. I think, and I've been trying to figure out how to word this, but I think that I'm traveling, but I hope that you're following me. Yes, I'm writing a book, and hopefully in this book things will be pieced together in a way that's easier to follow. My friend describes everything I do as like a stream of consciousness. Hopefully you're following what I'm saying. I guess, okay, let me try to break this down a little differently. The whole point of this conversation is people assuming that the devil is like a simple symbol and you can just wave a Bible or a cross at him. But that is based on pastors who, rather than, I think, following God, they followed tradition, and the traditions were set for them by various institutions, which were the first way that they were introduced to God in the first place. Even my father, I think he was introduced by some missionary group. You understand, like, these systems existed before you. They've had thousands of years to get accurate. And in that same context, the devil has had thousands of years to innovate on how to mess you up. So if you want something that is slightly unsettling, I mean, even the Bible does say it, right? That be vigilant, because the devil, your enemy, is roaming around like a roaring lion. He's always there. He's always looking for your weak spot. He's always looking for the weak one to use. He's always using the weak point. And So as I now talk about everything else, what I'm saying to you is, when I don't care what country on this planet you're in, when they're like, we're the best country in the world, or our system's the best, and yada, 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 that is a fruit. And it is a fruit of the devil. For analogy purposes, if you don't believe in Christianity or whatever, that's actually perfectly fine. Don't get distracted by the allegory that I'm making here. I'm literally telling you that when somebody says something that sounds good to you, there's a reason it sounds good to you, and maybe you shouldn't bite. Because it's almost like we are wired to fail. It is almost like we're wired to pursue these inadequate courses of action, these ineffective courses of action. We waste enough food in the world to feed everybody that's hungry. We have more than enough clothing. And so every time you hear some new wave thing that, oh my God, we have to eat bugs because there's not enough food. Meanwhile, there's fat people all over the place. And there's food going to waste. My God, we throw perfectly good food into the compost because it didn't fit our needs. What were our needs? Well, I didn't need it in my store. If you want to take it, that's fine. Oh, you don't have transportation? I'll just throw it in the trash because it's cheaper. Then you have people who could be leaders. And this part is the part where, another part, I guess, where I have beef with God. Because by design, if you take a genius, right, I think genius is lonely. And the genius is defined in general with their mind. They have moving goalposts. Their brain is always on fire. They have this incessant need to work. They're never satisfied. Always looking to innovate. Always looking to move things. It's a great skill, great quality, fantastic part of character. But if it lacks a moral foundation or moral base, you're in trouble. Because that individual will stand above everybody else in the room. That individual will be on a pedestal because of what they can create. That individual living that kind of lifestyle begins to see everyone around him as pawns. And it's hard not to. It's almost inevitable. It's like gravity. So this is why, and I think people pick up on this, right? I think they pick up on it on both sides. If you're a person who becomes extremely wealthy, you begin to distance yourself from people because you realize they only come around because you're wealthy. And indeed, some of them seek you out specifically because they understand how wealthy you are. Others of them are simply regular friends. Because see, this is important, right? if you're a regular friend to a group of people, one of them's going to ask you for money at some point. Like, that's actually normal, right? But you see it differently when you have millions and other people know you have millions. Because even if you want to say no, right, because you believe the reason that the person needs the money is not a good reason, and you're like, yeah, I have it, but I don't want to give it to you because of X, Y, and Z. Well, you don't want to say that. And so, of course, you're like, well, you know, I have money tied up in this. So, of course, they know you're lying, right? And that creates this friction between the two of you. And it's like, oh, my God. And it explodes, right? And therefore, you see this as a reaffirmation that the people around you are not on your level. And it creates this distance between you and them. On the same part, if you take people that are not very wealthy. And I do not believe genius is exclusively wealthy. I'm just trying to give you as many examples as come to my mind at the moment. But if you have a pastor. Okay. Who became a pastor because they felt like they were moved by God. Fantastic, right? Doesn't mean that they will not help save souls. Does not mean that they will not help move mountains for people. And they absolutely will. The question is, are they going to do their part to increase their knowledge? I can't tell you how many times you see a pastor who looks at a bit of science and decides that this bit of science must be against God. It must be heathenistic. It must be whatever. And therefore decides to preach against it on Sunday without actually understanding what it is, what goes on with it. They have no bearing on it whatsoever. They don't know the ins and outs of it, but they just know that they're not supposed to like it. Either because A, they fear it, or B, they were told to fear it by the institution that they joined. If you look at racism in church, and actually if you've been listening to the news here recently, you've probably heard at least a couple stories about this, where there were some churches thinking about integrating and different things like that. And how they're resistant to integrating. I mean, church is resistant to integrating in 2020. My God. That should tell you how many people are praying right there in that specific church. Because if you're praying, what's the issue? But you know, you want to keep that separate. Listen. This church and the state is separate in the society that you live in. It is not separate in the church. So the politics of the church are fully intertwined with the Bible that the church is supposed to be reading. And in that Bible, you will find that anyone who progresses any kind of racist language is in the wrong. You will find it clearly. I don't need to point voices to you. You read it for yourself. Read the Bible for yourself. Read it two or three times through. And you will conclude that, you know what? Racism's probably not what Jesus had in mind. And it's not complicated. It's not. But it is complicated because humans, and just like the pastors, and this is why I'm trying to bring everything full circle for you, and The individual is lazy. The individual is not doing research on their own. The individual is not reading the Bible on their own. And they're just not whatever. So it's easy to egg on the genius for figuring out an invention, becoming rich, and then not wanting to give you money because he feels like what you want to use the money for is stupid. And therefore you feel like he is being a little lazy. He could help teach you, or he could even, depending on his wealth, pay somebody to teach you to get it correct. That's absolutely true. At the same token, you could work a little harder to figure out what it is exactly you are supposed to see, understand, believe, do, create, inspire, and continue. You are the boogeyman. That's the point. Now, you're not the boogeyman by yourself. The devil is whispering in your ear like he was whispering in Eve's. You're whispering in your own ear because laziness. Institutions are whispering in your ear because money. I said it earlier, and this is another part of my beef with God. It's, we were born into a battlefield, and I'm using God and on this stuff, but if you're not a Christian or any type of religious, whatever, it's fine. Even from a secular mind, you should fully understand this, because I'm not Christian right now either. And I say not Christian right now because that actually means something, but whatever. The point being, you clearly can realize that you were born into battlefield. Now, it is important to denote where in the battlefield you were born. There are actually some people being born in the literal battlefield. And what comes to my mind right now is the Rohingya in Myanmar. What comes to my mind is if you're born in Crimea, if you're born in Ukraine, if you're born in Syria, if you're born in Yemen, if you're born in Libya, if you're born in the Cameroon, if you're born in, I think it's Cameroon where, well, he kind of disappeared, that guy. I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe the media just stopped reporting on him. Whatever. If you're born in Mexico, hell, if you're born in America, we've been fighting a war with other countries for 17 years. And if you're born in the right section where all of your family or all of your extended family went to war, you've probably experienced a substantial amount of loss. So those are literal battlefields, but I need you to understand that every human on this planet, and this is part of what I mean by my quote-unquote beef with God, is we were born into a mental battlefield and minefield, and we were told to pick a side. And in that context, this blue ball that we all share begins to feel like a prison. Hence the whole alien comment from earlier. If you realize I've been trying to come full circle a few different ways here. But the joke is that Mothership is hiding out somewhere near Uranus, and they're teaching me a lesson. But I'm not one to miss a lesson. And I hope that you, as a mitizen, well, y'all don't know what that word is yet, but I'll explain it in the book. But hopefully you, as an individual, choose not to ignore the lesson. You choose to learn it. And I think we all have to be active. We all have to take it upon ourselves to destroy the systems that are before us. And you may think of that as in destroying people, but there are literally thousands of ways to break systems without hurting people. And sometimes you just need to use time in the proper format, and that'll do it. You can increase its decay rate. Anyway, let's recap real quick, because maybe I lost you somewhere in there. Very straightforwardly, the devil is only part of the boogeyman. You were also part of the boogeyman because your actions contribute to the behavior, just like Eve's actions contributed to what the serpent suggested. So the devil, you can wave your cross at him. You can throw holy water at him. You can throw your Bible at him. He's not going to explode like some vampire in the sunlight. He can quote scripture to you. He can probably beat you with the Bible. It just is what it is. And he's had thousands of years to perfect this, so it's just evolution, let's say. Now, beyond that, you know, pastorship should have had plenty of time to evolve as well, but for some reason it has always been limited, and I have come to the conclusion that each pastor, as most humans do, battle tradition. I've not seen many who choose to abandon tradition, encourage knowledge, and push forward. Because at the end of the day, being a pastor is similar to being a politician. And that's a brutal thing to say, but I'm going to sip my tea. And geniuses kind of, not geniuses, I would say. Well, geniuses, yeah, because, you know, I made the comment about these pastors disrespecting science in a way, and it's kind of interesting because in the old days, it was pastors who progressed science. My, how the times have changed, right? There is a verse that I latch on to that other people don't, and I've debated my mother on this, but it says, "For my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge." And it goes on to say more stuff, don't get me wrong. But I think the reason the Bible and other literature in the world persists is because it means different things on different days under different contexts. But that one sticks out to me quite clearly because ignorance is not bliss. It is rather the perpetuation of human suffering because we do not know enough about coronavirus. America is suffering for it and the world is suffering for it. Because we do not know enough about the flu, we expect a certain number of humans to die every year from the sniffles. How crazy is that? Because we do not know enough about cancer, thousands, millions die every year. Because we do not figure out how to transport food that is not needed to the proper areas, people die. So, no, ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is the perpetuation of suffering. And in that same context, when a pastor chooses to remain ignorant on science because he claims he believes in God, beware, O young one, or old one, or religious one, or traditional one, or whatever you want to acclaim yourself to. Beware when you listen to a pastor who doesn't encourage more knowledge. And beware of yourself for not praying over that knowledge. If you're a genius, beware of yourself. People will put you on a pedestal. You will finally see yourself on that pedestal. And then you will realize that you can do a lot more with the world from the pedestal point of view than you thought you could. Because up until that point, you were lonely. Up until that point, you probably were bullied and ostracized, but you finally created something that undeniably moved the needle. And now, maybe you want payback. Maybe you want release. I don't know, but what is the quote from the movies? Great power comes with great responsibility. I leave that seed with you. This has almost been about 40 minutes of rambling, but hopefully you have gathered what I'm trying to say. Don't be satisfied with what you don't know. Make time to know it. Rebellion is the cornerstone of innovation. You have to do this. We have to do this. I plead with you to do this. Like, you're tired of seeing that homeless guy on the street. If you're tired of seeing the government officials seemingly pocket endless money and get away with it, you're tired of being pulled over by a cop who was told to meet a quota. You're tired of your government sticking a camera in every corner and saying that you have to fit some social credit system. In order to quote-unquote resist, you need to open your mind. And if you choose to stop lying yourself, It will make you very aware of all the lies that are occurring around you. And that can begin your transformation in a way. But anyway, when somebody's offering you a fruit, analyze it. Don't just bite it. Okay, ciao, ciao.